Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Alexander Scamilton to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the labelling fallacy. And can I just say, Alexander Scamilton, bloody perfect.
Well, it's 4th of July. Yeah. As we're recording it, we're kind of like three quarters of an hour into the 4th of July, so happy that. Do you say happy Independence Day, I guess? That. I guess you say happy 4th of July. Anyway, happy 4th. And so, you know, Founding Father, I thought Alexander Scamilton would be a good one for this week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the labelling fallacy. This one is a kind of crossover with a lot of different fallacies that we've already talked about. Basically, it is when you assign a label, usually a negative one, to either a person or an idea. Yep. to just have a shortcut, really, to dismissing them. You don't engage with their evidence or the argument they're making. You just give them a label, and that means you can kind of lump them in with another group. It can be an ad hominem, because it could be you're attacking them as a person. Yeah. It's got elements of the halo fallacy as well, because maybe you're just remarking on one trait that they have.
One aspect, so everything else is awful.
There's maybe a bit of dysphemism in there. When we talked about Trump calling Hillary Crooked Hillary instead of using her name, he would give her nicknames.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a labelling thing, especially when you do it repeatedly. If you kind of assign a label and then continually use that label, which is a thing that Trump likes to do.
Constantly does it.
You are trying to put in your audience's mind that label associated with that person. And when you hear that over and over again, you start to kind of think, oh, yeah, okay.
And you've not got to provide any evidence for the label. You just keep saying it,
and it
becomes its own evidence. It becomes an accelerated truth because then you can draw on that. You know, as we all know, Crooked Hillary that's the kind of thing she would do, and everybody goes yes because she's crooked with no evidence presented at all.
So our first example is from Trump.
They want to demolish the legacy of America's founding in 1776 and its place. They want to force their sick creed of woke communism on every American man, woman, and child. You see it every day.
Yeah, you see it every day. The sick creed of woke communism.
Woke communism. Fantastic.
He's sick talking about creed. The Democratic Party platform, essentially.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Without
the
engaging
sick
at
creed
all
of woke communism.
In what Democrats' policies are. In any way.
Yeah.
Being
yeah.
very dismissive. You know, if you call it a sick creed of woke communism, there's no need to engage with it. Because that's obviously a bad thing.
No, because people are going to be a bit turned off by that. Yes, that's it. Yeah. So and he's doing his usual thing of saying, you know, trust me. You don't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm done all the thinking for you. Yeah, however much thinking that involves.
But the one that's in there as a representation of how much people use it is woke, really, because labelling something as woke has become an argument on the right. It's anything you don't like can be woke. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Anyone who says anything that is anti-Trump, like Fox News can be woke if they don't show enough fealty to Trump on a particular day.
Yeah. Or if he disagrees with any kind of point of view they hold, then they're woke.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're looking forward to the day when Alex Jones is woke.
Yeah.
Probably will be. Yeah.
And the Republican viewers, as has been shown by people like Jordan Klepper interviewing them at Trump rallies and things like that, they hate anything woke.
Yeah.
They don't understand what woke is.
But they know to hate it.
But if something is described as woke, they know it's bad.
Yes.
And so that's safe. If someone says, oh, well, this is just a woke policy or this is a woke politician or this thing that this person said, which is anti-Trump, is just wokeness. They go, well, I know not to believe that then, because
because it's woke
is bad. It doesn't need an explanation at all.
Woke is the new. Yeah, what is woke? The new political correctness is.
I mean,
woke the new political correctness.
Probably perhaps? Yes,
because it used to be it's political correctness gone mad, and there was, I'm sure there was a phrase before that. you know, there was that, yes, that kind of lefty do-gooding...
Bleeding heart liberals. That's another one.
Liberals.
If you, if you describe someone as a bleeding heart liberal, then all of the stuff they say can be viewed in that frame. You don't need to address any specific things they say or think.
Urban liberal elite.
So our second example is the debate between Kelly Loeffler and Raphael Warnock when they had the runoff election in Georgia.
Debate is a very strong word.
Oh, yeah, really, yeah.
Kelly
had a talking point that she went in with, that she wanted to make sure everyone had a very clear idea of what she thinks of Raphael Warnock. And so she said it a few times, and I made a little bit of a compilation.
The Democrats want to fundamentally change America, and the agent of change is my opponent, radical liberal Raphael Warnock. My opponent, radical liberal Raphael Warnock. Radical liberal Raphael Warnock, you've just heard more lies from radical liberal Raphael Warnock. My opponent, radical liberal Raphael Warnock, would be a rubber stamp for Chuck Schumer, radical liberal Raphael Warnock. And my opponent, radical liberal Raphael Warnock. But my opponent, radical liberal Raphael Warnock, is a socialist. These are more lies from radical liberal Raphael Warnock. Or we can take the path of socialism that radical liberal Raphael Warnock wants to bring to our country. Radical liberal Raphael Warnock. Radical liberal Raphael Warnock. Radical liberal Raphael Warnock. And my opponent, radical liberal Raphael Warnock.
It's quite a satisfying thing to say, though, because it's like...
Radical
it's
liberal Raphael Warnock.
Yeah, 2332, isn't it?
But, yeah. So this debate was an hour long. It's 56 minutes or something like that long. So that is...
50 of them were her saying.
Yeah, well, obviously, they typically only get to talk for half the time each. It was moderated debate, so they had their time limited. Yeah. So in certainly less than half an hour, she called him specifically Radical Liberal Raphael Warnock about 14 times, roughly once every 2 minutes that she was talking.
Wow. And that takes... That's a good 15 seconds, isn't it? Yeah.
And she never once said his name without including Radical Liberal, because she wanted you to, every time you thought of Raphael Warnock, think... Radical Liberal Raphael
Warnock.
You think
of Radical Liberal.
Which, if anything, helped him because he won that election.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, he's the. Who was that Radical Liberal guy? Oh, it's Raphael Warnock. Okay. I'm going to vote for him.
I definitely want to vote for that Radical Liberal guy.
Yeah. Because he's not a woke communist. He's a Radical Liberal. Yeah. It is. There's something. Didn't we do one fallacy which was like rhyming is good?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of belongs to that.
Episode 51, I think.
Right. It's satisfying to say, and yet it has the, it's a bit of Streisand effect going on. And also, it's the perfect advertising, because you would just, if you were Raphael Warnock, you'd just shove that on your posters, wouldn't you? Radical liberal Raphael Warnock.
Yeah, not far away from all of this happening was the Republican primary, when Vivek Ramaswamy tried to cement his position by comparing himself to all of the other actual politicians that were trying to compete against Trump, trying to be the Republican candidate.
You have a bunch of people, professional politicians, super PAC puppets, following slogans handed over to them by their 400-page super PACs last week. The real choice we face in this primary is this. Do you want a super PAC puppet, or do you want a patriot who speaks the truth?
Super PAC puppet is really good. Patriot who speaks puppet. The truth. Yeah. Whereas Patriot...
Yeah, no, he needed something else as snappy as that.
You could get Patriot and Truth, because the pack and puppet is in the middle. Yeah, Patriot who something's the truth but not speaks. Got to be an A sound, doesn't it?
He did do a bit of rapping.
Did he?
Patriot who raps the truth. Yeah, he did.
Oh, there you go.
Did you never see
Vivek
raps?
And I do not want to see
unbelievably cringe.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yeah, it's quite simple. He was just telling you what you should think about the other candidates without engaging at all in the things that they were saying on the debate stage.
Super PAC puppets.
And yeah, they're super PAC puppets. They just are regurgitating the stuff that they've been told by their super PACs. And I don't do that.
Yeah.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
So we're first off at the Tory Party conference on the 5th of October, 2022. This is 2 weeks after her mini-budget. And here's Liz Truss labelling just about everybody who thought her mini-budget was a bad thing.
Cutting taxes is the right thing to do, morally and economically. We will keep an iron grip on the nation's finances. I will not allow the anti-growth coalition to hold us back. Labour, the Lib Dems, the SNP, the militant unions, the vested interests dressed up as think tanks, the talking heads, the Brexit deniers, Extinction Rebellion, and some of the people we had in the hall earlier. From broadcast to podcast, they peddle the same old answers. It's always more taxes, more regulation, and more meddling. Wrong, wrong, wrong.
Podcasts, can't believe we got a mention. Excellent.
I know. Bit harsh on David Byrne's old band there, the Talking Heads. And the people in the hall earlier were Greenpeace, but they're all lumped in as the anti-growth coalition. While she's making this speech, the UK mortgage rate had gone up to 6% from below 3.6% prior to her fiscal event and 4.2% the week before. So it was going up. The impact of her growth, her moral duty to cut taxes.
The mortgage rate was growing. That's what she was saying. People, you know, everyone there who was anti what she was doing was the anti-mortgage rate growth coalition.
Yeah. And anybody who said otherwise was wrong. She tried so desperately hard to cosplay Margaret Thatcher with her three-word things.
She never managed it once, did she? She didn't get a single...
No.
Well, the things that people remember, it was that when she was Trade Secretary and she was talking about foreign cheese and stuff like that and pork markets from Beijing. Those are the things that people remember that she said. She never had a single thing that she was trying to say in a memorable way that people went, you know, that's going in the political
that's
quote
really
book.
That's really profound. Yeah.
Never, ever happened. Only the times when she was trying to be normal and failing.
Yeah. And I think also the time that she tried to literally cosplay Margaret Thatcher, when she wore what Thatcher wore when she was riding a tank prior to the Falklands War, which was, you know, the only war we could do in the 80s without going nuclear, which would guarantee an election win. I rest my case. And that's what Liz Truss was doing in order to avoid a vote of no confidence. But yeah. Mm. Our second example, this is 2 days before Liz Truss resigned. So this is the 18th of October, 2022. Just Stop Oil campaigners continued their wave of protests and they blocked the Dartford Crossing, which is a great big bridge named after Queen Elizabeth II. And they blocked access between Kent and Essex. Basically, there's this thing that that goes across the Thames at the wide end, way out east. and Kent on the southern side and Essex on the northern side is part of the M25, which allows you to go to the orbital around London. Braverman claimed that the police would have been able to remove the protesters sooner if the opposition hadn't blocked the crime and policing bills in the Commons earlier in the year, and had this to say in labelling those opposed to her bringing in increased police powers to prevent protests.
I'm afraid, Madam Deputy Speaker, it's the Labour Party, it's the Lib Dems, it's the Coalition of Chaos, it's the Guardian reading, tofu eating, wokerati, dare I say, the anti-growth coalition that we have to thank for the disruption that we are seeing on our roads today. Madam Deputy Speaker, I urge opposition MPs and members of the opposite other place to take this second chance, do the right thing, respect the rights of the law-abiding majority and support this bill.
So basically it's the bill to increase powers of the police. But yeah, there it is, the Guardian reading, tofu eating, wokerati. And the anti-growth coalition makes a reappearance, extending their purview, apparently, to mucking about in traffic. That's, you know, dare I say, the anti-growth coalition.
They wear many hats.
They're a very versatile coalition. They include, there's a broad tent. Yeah. And and by the way, I am the proud owner of a tea towel with Guardian reading, tofu eating, wokerati emblazoned on it. See, I'm bringing down the government, drying one saucer at a time. And as a side note, in May 2024, the legislation introduced by Braverman giving police officers more leeway to stop disruption that she was trying to get everybody to pass was ruled unlawful by the High Court in that it didn't have a proper legal basis. Yeah, weirdly. And the Home Office failed to consult properly on it. Also note that the Labour Party were implicated in there too. The then Shadow Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, is seen laughing as Braverman says this, which is somewhat ironic given that Our third example, last week, the protest group Palestine Action, who broke into RAF Brize Norton and sprayed some jet planes with red paint, protesting at the UK arms trade being complicit in Israel's bombing of Gaza, have been proscribed, i.e. labelled, as a terrorist organisation, a bit like Antifa, and thus banned from further protest on pain of arrest and jail by the now Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper. Labour MP Clive Lewis responded thus.
We've seen violent protests. We've seen protests over the summer where people were trying to burn down mosques and asylum centres. These were violent acts against people that endangered people. There is a difference between what we are doing here, prescribing these or this organisation as a violent terrorist organisation, and what those people did, which was to attack people and property and racist violence.
You mentioned the riots we saw in summer. We haven't seen the prescription of groups like the EDL or Britain First. Why do you think we're seeing the prescription of a group like Palestine Action before groups like that?
I think some of this is politically motivated. I think it's a government, my government, that is desperate to appeal to a certain part of the electorate, whether that's on immigration, whether that's on policing, whether that's on terrorism, I suppose. But this isn't terrorism. It's protest, disruptive protest. But there's a long history in this country of disruptive protest. You know, Yvette Cooper, the Home Secretary, a female Home Secretary, she knows that she's in politics because suffragettes threw themselves in front of the King's Horse. They disrupted state occasions. What are they terrorists? Were they terrorists? So I think we need to be really careful here, because I think most people understand actions like this can end up as a slippery slope.
Got another fallacy at the end, but it's very, very interesting that he's a Labour MP, and he was one of the protesting voices against the prescription of this protest group to becoming a terrorist. And they're not a terrorist organisation. There's an artist who's a kind of Hogarthian, modern-day Hogarth artist called Cold War Steve on Facebook, and he summed it up with a picture of Starmer and Yvette Cooper standing by some jet planes covered in red paint, and underneath it says terrorism, and then they're standing by the bombed-out ruins of Gaza, and under there it says not terrorism. And so, but what's interesting is that Clive Lewis is not talking about the actions of the British government in supporting Israel's right to defend itself whilst they carry out massive bombing attacks on Gaza, brackets, also Iran, close brackets. What he's saying is, if we start prescribing this kind of legitimate dissent as terrorism, where does that end? And the excellent question from the interviewer, that they were saying, yes, we had these protests in last summer. Those pro-British, fascist, anti-Asian, anti-immigrant, racist groups were not prescribed as terrorist organisations, even though they had done what are defined as terrorist acts. They had put people in danger. Yeah. They had burned down hostels in order to kill the people inside. And yet they've not been prescribed. And quite rightly, he says it's probably politically motivated. And, you know, great for him. I'm fully expecting him to lose the whip at any point. I suspect he also voted against the welfare bill that went through. Whilst we're on the subject, over the weekend at Glastonbury, the punk duo Bob Villain and the crowd watching chanted, "Death to the IDF, the Israel Defense Force." Of course, we use the word death to mean not only the end of a person, but the end of an institution or a system. It's regularly used in the language of change, but needless to say, everyone weighed in with condemnation. Keir Starmer, the BBC, even Emily Eavis, organiser of Glastonbury itself. The UK Embassy of Israel did some advanced level labelling in saying, "The Embassy of Israel in the United Kingdom is deeply disturbed by the inflammatory and hateful rhetoric expressed on stage at the Glastonbury Festival." All they said was death to the IDF. "Freedom of expression is a cornerstone of democracy, but when speech crosses into incitement, hatred, and advocacy of ethnic cleansing, death to the IDF, it must be called out, especially when amplified by public figures on prominent platforms. Ethnic cleansing?
That is fucking amazing. Like, of a group to evoke the problem of ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
At the, right now, like yeah. in 2025.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Whilst participating in that very act. So here's British-Israeli journalist and author Rachel Sharby speaking on LBC, who's pointing out the whataboutery being peddled within the labelling.
Truthfully, what disturbs me the most is the media bandwidth given to this subject. Just this weekend, we've had some of the deadliest bombardments on Gaza by Israel, carpet bombing Gaza, schools where people are sheltering were bombed. A cafe where people were seeking shelter from the heat was bombed. On Friday, Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, had a report where Israeli soldiers said, actually, yes, we are shooting to kill civilians. In a weekend where we've had these two things, on top of a 20-month-long war described as genocide by genocide experts, it is absolutely shameful and a disgrace that the media is focusing on this and not having the headlines running day after day on the atrocities that are being committed in Gaza.
This weirdly comes against the background of, in November 2020, there's an episode of the BBC's satirical current affairs programme, Have I Got News For You? Comedian Finn Taylor talking about former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. I only hate him so much because of his fans. Adding, people think that Bob Dylan's the greatest musician that ever lived, and you listen to some of it and it's awful, but then people are so dogmatic and say he's the greatest musician. People are like Corbyn. It's what, 200,000 people in the Labour Party that are fanatics. So all you've got to do next year is bomb Glastonbury and hopefully Dylan's headlining Two Birds with One Stone. Is he prescribed as a terrorist? No. Also, Morrissey has been advocating Hang the DJ as the final lyrics from the song Panic with apparent impunity since 1986.
Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. I will never say where things come from. The truth just doesn't count if I am wrong. So say that I am right, even when I'm not right, 'cause no one knows. Facts come and go.
Rolling Stones there, of course, with Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a name on me?
And in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the Fallacy of the Week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from All in the Family.
Yay.
This is an episode where basically everyone is trying to get Archie to stop smoking his cigar.
Give me that cigar before you puke.
How can you smoke those filthy bitches?
See what they do to you? Well, who the hell told her to do that? A girl ain't supposed to smoke a cigar.
Oh, it isn't good for anybody.
Oh, come on. That's just propaganda put out by some of these big companies. They make a lot of money out of no smoking.
What companies?
The companies that put out the no smoking sign.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Archie dismisses the science, basically, about smoking not being good for you as propaganda. And that's a great way to avoid engaging with,
yeah,
with science.
Yeah, yeah.
Or evidence. Just call it propaganda.
Put out by big no smoking. Yeah. Yeah, it's uh-huh. the same stuff, isn't it? Yeah, same stuff peddled in the What Doctors Don't Tell You magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the great thing is, when you're an organisation like, say, a presidential administration that engages in propaganda on a regular basis, calling other things propaganda means that when people then do it to you, rightfully, when they're actually pointing out genuine propaganda you are pushing, then it loses the power. It loses any ability for people to kind of take it as read that that is true, because you're calling any old shit propaganda.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope that that leads us to the sunlit uplands of people getting wise to the fact that this, you know, the current administration in the US is just a propaganda machine. Yeah, and that if it's pointed out to them, the self-same Republican government will go, oh, yeah, shit, we better stop doing that then.
That'll probably happen.
That'll probably happen.
Any minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So our next example is one that we've talked about a number of times. I'm not sure we've ever actually played it.
Right.
But it's been invoked.
Yeah, we've mentioned
a few
it
times.
A lot. It's kind of in our list of go-to it's
one of our
things.
Cultural touchstones.
Yes, there you go.
This is a clip from Not the 9 o'clock News.
Yeah.
And it's about a racist policeman being told off because he has repeatedly arrested an individual so many made-up charges.
Savage, why do you keep arresting this man?
He's a villain, sir.
A villain?
And a jailbird, sir.
I know he's a jailbird, Savage. He's down in the cells now. We're holding him on a charge of possession of curly black hair and thick lips.
Well, there you are, sir.
You arrested him, Savage.
Thank you, sir.
He's a jailbird. Yeah.
He's a villain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is, in Constable Savage's mind, the label that has applied to this individual. He's a villain. Yep. Therefore, it's okay to continually arrest him on charges such as wearing a loud shirt in a built-up area during the hours of darkness and walking around with an offensive wife and various other crimes that he claims this person has committed because he's a villain
and a jailbird.
I mean, essentially, that is what's happening right now with illegal aliens. That's the label that has been applied to people who committed what is a civil offence, but because they've all been tarred with the brush of illegal alien, that means you can do whatever the fuck you like to them with no due process and
with
no
impunity,
no comeback at all.
Yeah, because they're illegal.
They're villains.
Exactly.
They're illegal aliens. Yeah.
And the illegal immigrants is the term in, you know, they're not illegal immigrants. They're refugees. They're asylum seekers fleeing from conflict, some of which is bolstered by the UK arms trade. And you kind of think, they're not illegal immigrants, and you've just labelled them as sufficient that my next-door neighbour will complain of not being able to get a doctor's appointment because of all the illegal immigrants. And I said to him, probably last week, I said, well, you know that's not true. And then he tries to say it again. He said, I know I'm repeating myself. Yeah, and it's still not true. And if you just boldly say to them, it isn't true.
And ironically, given the number of members of the NHS who are immigrants, a number of whom decided to leave the UK for fear of being forced to against their will, with Brexit happening, that's part of what has caused waiting lists to increase over the last few years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our final example in this section is from Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the last episode of the first season. This is the preacher character, Clancy Brown. Brilliant, Clancy Brown.
Yeah.
I don't watch Carnival, but I am given to understand that this guy is not a good guy.
Right. Just from the things he said, maybe.
And so this is a kind of broadcasted sermon that he does towards the end of the series.
The worm reveals himself in many guises across this once great land. From the intellectual elite, cruelly indoctrinating our children with the savage blasphemy of Darwin, to the craven Hollywood pagans corrupting them in the darkness of the local bijou. From the false prophets cowering behind our nation's pulpits, to the vile parasites in our banks and boardrooms, and the godless politicians growing fat on the misery of their constituents.
Wow.
So he does quite a lot of labelling there.
Quite a lot of labelling in there. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Godless politicians, vile parasites.
Yeah.
Craven people in Hollywood.
False prophets.
Yeah, false prophets in there, cowering behind their pulpits. Essentially, labelling all of those groups individually as bad and negative things as a shortcut, as a way of saying... Yeah. These are bad people. You want to listen to me. I'm the one that knows what's going on and I'm telling the truth.
Not all the other TV
not
evangelists.
All of those people.
Listen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. See, yeah, one of my candidates for the Sting song was Randy Newman's Rednecks.
Okay.
For those people that have only encountered Randy Newman as writing those endearing songs from Toy
you got
Story,
a friend in me.
Yeah, exactly. He writes songs about short people and rednecks, and you know, with their short people with their little voices going me me me. He's really kind of quite sardonic.
He also wrote many of the songs for the first few episodes of Cop Rock.
Oh wow!
Including the theme tune.
Oh, we need to talk about that at length again. What the rednecks one is about, you know, we don't understand stuff because we're dumb. He stopped, and it's all about being too stupid to live north of the border. And and he stopped performing it when he toured the South because they would just sing along.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
Of course, the only description that can be used for this game is super biased, skewed, house always wins, unlevel lottery, as the saying goes. You wouldn't catch me playing this, or I'm a parent's male sibling simian-wise.
Right, yes. So, the theme we have this week.
Right.
This is quite recent thing that he said, because are you aware of Alligator Alcatraz?
No.
Okay, so Alligator Alcatraz is the cutesy name for a concentration camp in Florida.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Which
okay.
They built in the Everglades. They built it in about 8 days, and it is designed to house about 5,000 immigrants to reduce the overpopulation of current ICE detention centres. Because ICE detention centres currently, I think they're designed to hold about 41,000 people, and there's about 56,000 detainees currently. So they're overcrowded. This is going to house some. And it's called Alligator Alcatraz, or Alligator Auschwitz, depending on who is saying it. It's in the Everglades. It's surrounded by swampland and alligators and crocodiles and pythons and things like that. Republicans think that's a very cool thing because if people try to escape, they'll get eaten. Other people think it's not an ideal situation, especially given that it's basically a tent city in a place that has 100 degree Fahrenheit summers.
A lot of mosquitoes.
And the diseases and stuff.
Humidity.
So...
Yeah. Yeah.
Generally seen as quite a negative thing, whereas the Republicans are selling merch.
No.
Because they think it's cool.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So Trump went along to the grand opening this week.
Of course. Yeah.
On the day it did actually open, they had a bit of rain and it flooded. So that wasn't great. But when he went along, this was before the actual place opened, and he did press conferences. Kristi Noem went and Ron DeSantis, and they said awful things. And Trump was asked a specific question by a reporter. A reporter said, "Mr. President, is there an expected time frame that detainees will spend here? Days, weeks, months? And does that have anything to do with the immigration judges you just spoke about being trained and staffed here?" And he asked for clarification on the question. He asked what the person was saying, and they repeated it. They basically said, okay, I'm talking about is there an expected time that the detainees will spend here in Alligator Alcatraz?
Mm-hmm.
This is parts of his response to that specific question.
Yeah.
Number one, he said, "I'll be here a lot. I plan to spend time here whenever I can. You know, the weather's great and I like a lot of the people here. A lot of them are friends of mine. Maybe I think a lot more would like to be my friend, but we'll have to see about that. Depends on a lot of things. Ron didn't used to be my friend, but then he said some very nice things about me. But Florida is, I like it here a lot. I like it better than some other places.
What?
Yeah.
What? Okay.
Statement number two.
Yeah.
I feel very comfortable in the state. I'll spend a lot of time here. I want to, you know, for 4 years, I've got to be in Washington, and I'm okay with it because I love the White House. I even fixed up the little Oval Office. I made it. It's like a diamond. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. It wasn't maintained properly, I will tell you that. But even when it wasn't, it was still the Oval Office, so it meant a lot. But I'll spend as much time as I can here.
Okay.
And
right.
Statement number three. You know, my vacation is generally here because it's convenient. I live in Palm Beach. It's my home. And I have a very nice little place, nice little cottage to stay at, right? But we have a lot of fun. And I'm a big contributor to Florida, you know, pay a lot of tax. And a lot of people moved from New York. And I don't know what New York is going to do. A lot of people moved to Florida from New York. And it was for a lot of reasons.
Pay a lot of tax. You don't pay a lot of tax. People move for reasons. Yeah. Okay. Right. And this is in response to the prisoners that you're holding. How long are they going to be here?
Long,
and then he's
how long
off
do you expect
on
them to spend
one
here?
About, well, I'm going to come whenever I can. And a lot of people have moved here for reasons. Yeah. And it's okay. Yes, it is the diamond. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. It wasn't maintained, I'll tell you that. But even when it wasn't, it was still the... So it meant a lot. And now is that... That's a... Yeah, is that a Trumpism? Or is that a Jim Trumpism? Where... And also for a lot of reasons. That... It's a good gag. And it might be too Jim to be Jim, not Trump. And then Ron used to be my friend when he said some nice things about me. Feels very Trump, but also could be a well as a... Okay, I gotta go with... I don't know. I think number two is the one you made up. The diamond.
Okay.
One.
And of the other two...
Yeah.
Which are you more convinced by?
I think probably three.
And number three
mm-hmm.
is real.
You know, my vacation is generally here because it's convenient. I live in Palm Beach. It's my home. And I have a very nice little place, nice little cottage to stay at, right? But we have a lot of fun. And I'm a big contributor to Florida, you know, pay a lot of tax. And a lot of people move from New York. And I don't know what New York is going to do. A lot of people moved to Florida from New York. And it was for a lot of reasons.
So, yeah, he did say that.
Yeah.
And
Jesus Christ.
As you've probably noticed, there isn't an answer in any of these three to the question.
Yes.
Because
he's
losing it or lost it, either way.
Mm.
And despite having this question asked very clearly and precisely twice, he thought she was asking him, how often do you plan to stay in Florida?
How often do you plan to come to Florida?
Do you come here
not
often,
to the jail.
Basically?
Yeah.
And so he was like, oh, yeah, I love Florida. It's great. And rambled for a while about how much he loves Florida, ignored completely the actual question he was being asked. And in fact, the purpose of the press conference he was at, which was about the new concentration camp.
And you would kind of think that it would be uppermost in his mind. That,
oh, yeah.
That
he'd just been talking about it.
You know, someone's going to ask a question. Okay, how long are people going to be held here? Given how heinous the place is. But he heard, nice to see you in Florida. Do you come here often? Do you like it? And then he said, lots of people move from New York, and New York's got problems because people have moved out. Because reasons?
Yeah. Oh, incidentally, in that one, he said, you know, I'm a big contributor to Florida. I pay a lot of tax.
Mm.
Bullshit. Because do you know the income tax rate in Florida? The percentage of state income tax?
25%? 0%.
They do not have a state income tax in Florida.
Whoa.
They do in New York, where he moved from.
Yeah.
But he literally contributes absolutely nothing, certainly from his income taxes.
Because it's not required.
Yeah, there's property tax that he'll pay. because he has property in Florida. But that's it.
Yeah.
That's the extent to which he contributes to Florida. So you also think that number one is real.
Uh-huh.
And number one is fake news.
Oh, good work. Yeah, it was the... Ron didn't used to be my friend, but then he said some very nice things about me. Genuinely, properly Trump. But yeah, should have seen that one. I like it better than some other places. Also, now I know, it's patently obvious. Yeah,
it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, no, which means that number two is not made up. It's actually real, said that.
A real thing, he said.
Somehow worse.
Yeah.
I feel very comfortable in the state. I'll spend a lot of time here. I want to, for 4 years, I've got to be in Washington, and I'm okay with it because I love the White House. I even fix up the little Oval Office. I make it, it's like a diamond. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. It wasn't maintained properly, I will tell you that. But even when it wasn't, it was still the Oval Office, so it meant a lot. But I'll spend as much time as I can here.
And so, yeah, he's talking about, obviously, all of the shitty little bits of gold polystyrene that he's glued to the walls of the Oval Office. And, he's made it good now, because previously it was shit. It wasn't well-maintained at all.
Yeah. But now it's like a diamond, one of those lab-made fake diamonds.
The thing is, we've seen photos and video of Mar-a-Lago. We know what a complete fucking shithole that place is. The Oval Office is completely redecorated every 4 years. How many rooms in the world get that much attention?
Yeah.
It's one of the best maintained rooms there is. So, that means that unfortunately you didn't get that one right this week.
Man.
We do have a few social contestants, of course.
Right.
On Patreon. Rene Z says, oh my God, this was a great example of his mental decline. Reporter from Fox asks a simple gimme question and the old man can't handle it. I think number two and number three are real. Number one could and should be real, but it's fake news. Good job, Jim, on duplicating his brain made of mush.
Ah, well done, Renee. Wow.
And she also mentions that Alligator Auschwitz was flooded on the first day when it rained.
Nice, yeah.
On Facebook, Jeremy says, I think three is a small slight at the recent primary in New York, but between the other two, fucking hell, who knows? One, maybe? Yeah, one. One is fake, maybe.
Yeah, I like the confidence of that.
Richard Thunder Hopkins says, hello, number one is fake news. It's the only one which starts with an actual answer to a question that was never asked. They all naturally descend into complete and utter madness, just like the whole of the United States. Never been happier to not live there. Thank you for your attention in this matter.
Very good.
And finally, Karen Morey says, my daughter says three is fake because she always picks the one that sounds the most like Trump, and that one turns out to be fake because Trump is so insane, nothing he says sounds like Trump. I'm going with number one because I believe in Trump insulting the Oval Office and bragging about how much taxes he's paid, but really all of these have that Trumpy combo of spite and being unable to follow any thread of logic.
Nice.
I mean, that is what I go for, a combo of spite and lack of logic.
Yeah. And also, it's so Trumpy, it's got to be fake, but it isn't because it's so Trumpy. I like that. I should apply that. I'm just making a note of that. Yeah. Spite and Trumpiness. Yeah.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called The One Big Beautiful Bill is Still Not a Logical Fallacy. Because we did talk about this before.
Yeah.
But that was when it was it going through the House? I think it may have just passed the House at the time.
Yeah.
The first go round.
Yeah.
And then it had to go to the Senate. And as everyone predicted, I'm not going to claim that we had any kind of special insight into this, the Senate changed it enormously.
Yeah.
Because it was a bill that had had a lot of changes to get it through the House.
Mm.
Because none of the stuff that they really wanted was liked by everyone.
It was agreeable.
It also wasn't liked by the Senate, although in different ways. And also there was lots of stuff in there that wasn't actually things you're allowed to do with this kind of bill.
Yeah.
Because again, another thing we've talked about on other episodes is the Senate parliamentarian, Elizabeth McDonough, whose job it is to make sure that all of the stuff in the bill is actually relevant to a budget reconciliation bill, because that's how they're making this a thing that is filibuster proof, is by making this just a budget thing, although they've actually put a huge amount of different things in there that aren't related to the budget. Like, they wanted to make it so that if you are in contempt of court, there's nothing the courts can do about it, basically.
Right.
And the Senate parliamentarian went, no, that's not a budget thing.
Yeah.
Nothing
to do with
you
that.
You have to let people hold people accountable if they commit crimes. That's a thing.
Jesus. Yeah.
So they took that out. There's various other things that were, like, quite a lot of other things that were rejected by the Senate parliamentarian. Mm-hmm. Things about, for example, the elimination of a regulation that requires nursing homes to have 24-hour nursing coverage and a minimum staffing ratio of nurses to patients. That's a thing that, for some reason, Republicans wanted to get rid of that regulation. And the Senate parliamentarian went, no, that's not a budget thing.
Yeah. That would lead to the death of countless people.
Of course it would, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wanted to ban the use of Medicaid funds for gender-affirming medical care for transgender minors and adults. That's not a budget thing again.
Yeah.
Just all kinds, loads and loads of different things that they were trying to turn into budget things.
Yeah.
They did actually manage to get a tax on silencers repealed, because there's a $200 tax on silencers.
Wow.
And... there's one congressman or senator, I think maybe senator, who is a gun shop owner. And he was like, I don't think we should charge people tax on silencers. And everyone was like, fine, whatever. Put it in the bill. It's only 960 pages already.
Yeah,
and
just shove it in.
That somehow managed to get through.
Why not? Let's stop preventing people from killing people silently.
It's worth mentioning that, I mean, people call them silencers. They're not really, they're not even generally called silencers in the gun trade. They're suppressors. Yeah. And they don't, by any means, silence a gun. They make it slightly quieter to shoot someone.
They're just the thing that James Bond screws into the end of an orthopedic case.
But then
it
makes it go... Yeah. But actually, it doesn't make it very quiet at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's essentially no different to covering it with a cushion or something. It's the level of difference.
Because that always works.
Absolutely that works.
Nobody can hear that happening.
Yeah.
You just get, why have all these feathers around?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason we're talking about it is that despite all of this bullshit in the bill, despite all the things that were stripped out by the Senate parliamentarian and all the changes that they had to make over multiple iterations, it did manage to make it through the Senate. And it made it through, I think, 2 days ago on like Tuesday. And that left very little time to meet Trump's completely arbitrary self-imposed deadline of the 4th of July. Which he decided he wanted to sign it on the 4th of July. And from the point at which it made it through the Senate, I think Lisa Murkowski was the last one to change her vote, because they carved out various things for Alaska that she wanted. And even after she signed it, she said it's not there. It's not kind of where it should be. It's not a good bill. But she got what she wanted out of it. So that's okay.
So she
signed it. It was 50-50 and J.D. Vance was the deciding vote.
Course,
as is his job as VP.
Yeah.
And then from that point, it had to go back to the House. Mm-hmm. And the House is a very narrow margin of Republicans to Democrats. And they had to essentially relook at this now quite different bill from the one they'd managed to
send
narrowly
up to
pass.
Senate. Yeah.
And they had at that point just over a day, basically, to get it signed in time for Trump's arbitrary deadline. And somehow, over the last, I think it was about 5 hours ago now, they passed it. It got through 218 to 214. Every Democrat voted against it, because obviously.
Yeah.
And
two
Republicans voted against it, including Thomas Massie, who is not a good guy, but didn't like this bill at all. And that's it. Those were the only two holdouts. Everyone else...
Yeah.
Ignored the fact that it now included a lot of things that they had previously said they absolutely weren't okay with and wouldn't pass.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just kind of held their noses and passed it. So that Trump gets his big Independence Day bill signing that he'll do
and they
tomorrow.
Don't get vilified on Truth Social and, you know.
Because they are spineless pieces of shit.
Yes, yeah. Who kind of who are quite willing to up the debt ceiling by $67 billion or whatever it is, and
$5 trillion dollars they will increase the deficit by.
Yeah,
they're perfectly happy with that. They'll be very happy to kick somewhere between 11 and 16 million people off healthcare,
Medicaid. Yeah.
Yeah,
and increase the taxes of those earning less than $30,000 a year by 76%.
Yeah,
yeah, quite happy with that. And at the same time, cutting their Medicaid. Yeah,
yeah. The poorest people will lose Medicaid, lose Social Security, and
pay more tax.
Have increased taxes.
Yeah.
The richest people, basically, I think it's of the actual kind of money that is affected by this. 70% of the outgoing goes to the top 10% of earners in the US.
Yeah,
from this bill, it is absolutely a tax cut for rich people.
Yeah,
paid for by a loss of benefits for poor people.
Yeah,
from SNAP, from Medicaid. There are minor changes to things like tax on overtime and tips, which, as we've discussed before, are things that don't actually affect that many people, because people who live on tips don't generally get to the threshold where they have to pay tax.
Yeah.
The tax cuts for middle class and lower income, not the lowest income people, are expiring within a few years. Mm-hmm. But the tax cuts for billionaires, the extension of tax cuts for billionaires, are now permanent. They've taken away the sunset clause for that, essentially.
Yeah.
And they have argued that this whole bill actually will reduce the deficit. The Republicans have argued that. And they've done that by a very weird version of math. Because obviously, anyone who does the actual math says this will increase the benefit.
Yeah.
So anywhere between $3.3 and $5 trillion to various versions have been looked at by the CBO. And they've said it's somewhere in that region. What the Republicans have tried to do is say the tax cuts for billionaires that were going to expire and that we're now not going to let expire.
Yeah.
That's not us spending more money, because that's just how it is currently, right? Currently, those tax cuts are in place. We're just going to leave those tax cuts in place. So we're not, that isn't costing us anything.
Right.
Whereas obviously, in the real world, if those tax cuts expired, the Treasury would get trillions more dollars from that. From those tax cuts over the course of, between now and 2030. But they're not letting those tax cuts expire. So in real terms, when you look at it, that costs the Treasury money. But the Republicans are using this, was it current policy maths, which is not how you do this.
No.
And saying, therefore, this actually is going to reduce the deficit, which obviously it won't,
because
the deficit is a real thing that you can look at money going in and out of. And in no way does this put money into the deficit to reduce it.
No, and it doesn't. And it doesn't reduce it even by the fact that it fails to increase it, because it increases it.
Absolutely.
What?
Okay. One thing that has been made not quite as bad as it could be is clean energy, because what they wanted to do with the One Big Beautiful Bill is they wanted to cut subsidies to clean energy, to solar and wind farms, and also tax them. They wanted to put extra tax on clean energy, which would have basically made it financially impossible to run a clean energy business, a solar business.
Yeah,
and the tax was removed, I think, by the Senate parliamentarian, but the subsidies that are now being stopped, that's still in the bill. So it is going to affect, it's going to make it more expensive.
Yeah.
Clean energy in favor, obviously, of fossil fuels.
Yeah.
But it isn't going to tax those out of existence. So they'll still be hard. They'll be harder to do. They'll be more expensive, but it'll still be worth doing it. So what that means basically is stock market wise, clean energy stocks were falling and had an uptick when it was announced that that tax was not going to be put on. So
right.
Good for the clean energy industry and anyone who's been following this closely enough to make a bit of money on those, I guess.
Yeah, I think I've actually got some part of my financial whatevers in green energy.
I do,
US.
I have a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know about in the US, but I, yeah, I've got
certainly
some
green, yeah, green stuff. You know, the rest, yeah, the rest of it, yeah, obviously, it's in
ethically arranged ethically, shares, yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah,
the rest of it's obviously in tobacco and arms.
But, yeah. Yeah, mostly, mine's mostly guns. Yeah,
yeah, guns, green guns, green sure, energy guns.
Yeah, yeah. None of this ethically sourced guns.
Ethically sourced guns. None of this plastic nonsense. Yeah, it's a proper thing. Guns that can rust. Yeah,
yeah.
Good old-fashioned guns and tobacco.
Yeah. So one of the other things that is or should have been an issue for the House Republicans that isn't for the Senate is SALT, which is state and local taxes.
Oh, okay.
Because there is there's a system.
Guards limitation, right, yeah.
No, there's a system by which you can reduce your federal tax burden based on the state and local taxes that you've paid.
Right.
The cap for that is $10,000,
yep,
and the bill increases that to $40,000, so rich people essentially can reduce their, like, people who already pay more than $10,000 in state and local taxes, which inevitably is rich people, they can increase their tax deduction up to $40,000.
Yep.
It does drop down again after 5 years back to $10,000, but this is a thing which, I mean, it doesn't help middle class or low earners at all.
Yep.
But it is a thing which people thought might have an impact on House Republicans because the Senate didn't give a shit about it because they're literally in the states where this is a thing.
Yeah.
None of them have senators in the Republican Party. They do, however, have Congress people in the Republican Party. So those people have the potential to lose votes based on this.
Yeah.
The fact that it's going to sunset. Also, like, potentially from lower earners who are pissed off that this is essentially another tax break for rich people.
Yeah.
So there's two ways that this could screw House Republicans. But apparently, again, this wasn't enough of a sticking point to make anyone stop just voting for it because Trump asked them to. There hasn't really, I mean, it's been a kind of closed system of the negotiations. We don't know how much they've even read the bill because it's a very short period of time to read and vote. Although they did have around 9 hours when Hakeem Jeffries was talking for his magic minute when they could read it. I doubt they did. But the minority leader of the House, Hakeem Jeffries, they have a rule. They don't have a filibuster, but they do have this magic minute where the leaders of each party can talk for as long as they like.
Right.
There's no limit. And the previous record for that was Kevin McCarthy, who talked for 8.5 hours, 8 hours, 32 minutes.
Wow.
To slow down the passage of something the Democrats wanted a few years ago.
Yeah.
And Hakeem Jeffries beat that record by around 15, 20 minutes.
Wow.
To just kind of delay this because it's all they could do.
Yeah.
And he spent that time talking about how shit this bill is and trying to convince
people.
Republicans as if they had a conscience.
To
not vote for it.
As if they really believed that the growth rate would increase as a result of all the tax cuts for the rich.
Yeah, like he was just pretending that they cared at all about their constituents.
Yeah.
It's
the Liz Truss right-wing bollocks of, you know, tax cuts will lead to growth.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't. It led to, meltdown, fiscal craziness, $22 billion black hole, mortgage rates going up for poor people.
Yeah. Yeah. So after Hakeem Jeffries stopped talking, they talked for a little bit longer and then they voted. And all of the House Republicans except Thomas Massey and Brian Fitzpatrick just passed it despite
people,
it being bad for them and their people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That's it. There's no, it doesn't kind of bounce back again or anything.
I mean, something really weird would have to happen because the next thing to happen is Trump has to sign it. So
it would be
quite weird if Trump went, you know what, actually, I don't like this bill.
Or I mean, maybe like marauding hordes of left-wing equivalents of Proud Boys kind of stormed the steps of the White House and prevented him from...
I don't think it would matter.
No. No. Yeah. They'd all end up in jail and they wouldn't get pardoned. Yeah.
There's no evidence Trump knows what's in the bill.
No.
I mean, he's been saying that it doesn't touch Medicaid until even Republicans pointed out it kind of does,
yeah.
though.
Well, yeah, and everybody's been saying, oh, yeah, he's been ushering through every line by line, he's been
there.
He can't read. We know he can't fucking read, so he's not
been
involved in it. And any words greater than one syllable, you can't deal with it.
No, he's occasionally been lightly threatening people. That's all that's happened.
That's it. And the people that have been lightly threatened have caved entirely because they think their career's on the line. Well, what kind of a career have you got if you're seeing this kind of shit through? For billionaires who are getting a tax break, not even the senators are earning enough to get a tax break. So why are they ushering stuff through? It doesn't benefit them other than Trump just...
It does, though.
Disenfranchise them.
I mean, it benefits them in that billionaires who get tax breaks are then happy to donate to their campaigns to get re-elected next time.
Yeah.
And other billionaires
that
benefit from the tax breaks run companies that have lobbyists prepared to give them money and do other things.
And hire them jobs as consultants.
So, they get a benefit from the system. But, Some of them do earn enough to benefit from it directly, but many of them don't.
It's fucked. At you.
It's really bad. It's just generally really, really bad.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
If you exist in the world, you probably know that Zohran Mamdani won the Democratic primary for New York mayor last week. Even my eldest was asking me at the weekend why the results of this obscure, distant election were all over her timeline, and I'll tell you what I told her. Because he absolutely terrifies Republicans. As a democratic socialist with Muslim Indian heritage born in Uganda, it's not surprising he terrifies them, but until the primary results, they barely knew he existed, because most people expected Andrew Cuomo to win, despite all the sexual predation. But Mamdani went from about 10% in early polls to a convincing contender in a matter of months. And he and other non-predator candidate Brad Lander cross-endorsed each other in order to scupper Cuomo's chances, thanks to the fact that it was a ranked choice vote. And if voters put Lander and Mamdani first and second, then it would make it easier for one of them to win. As it turns out, he didn't really need that boost, and his democratic socialist policies proved popular enough that Cuomo conceded on election night. And after all the votes were reassigned, Mamdani ended up with 56% to Cuomo's 44%. Those policies, incidentally, include support for affordable housing, rent freezes, free childcare, free city bus transport, and higher taxes on New Yorkers with income of over $1 million. It's that last one that Republicans really should focus on, given how well it ties in with their general policies on giving rich people tax breaks and pretending to believe in trickle-down economics. Despite it almost being designed to give them something to argue against, though, they were a bit distracted by just how unbelievably racist they are. Luminaries such as MTG, Charlie Kirk, Laura Loomer, Don Jr. and Nancy Mace all spouted Islamophobic bullshit, mostly invoking 9/11. Andy Ogles suggested removing his citizenship and deporting him. And Trump said he had a grating voice. Fucking Trump complained about the guy's voice. His win isn't a foregone conclusion, of course, since current mayor, definite criminal and Trump puppet Eric Adams is running as an independent, and Cuomo might have another go as an independent too. They'll probably all beat Republican candidate, former Guardian Angel leader Curtis Sliwa, but the simple fact that everyone is so scared of Mamdani makes him the one to watch, in my opinion.
Yeah. Whilst it is obvious with the insane spending of this bill, which increases the debt ceiling by a record $5 trillion, that we live in a one-party country, the Porky Pig Party... Thank you, Elon. It's probably just as obvious that Elon's a bit peeved about the bit of the bill cancelling the EV mandate, which, of course, didn't really ever exist. It was a 2021 executive order signed by Joe Biden that sought to ensure that half of all vehicles sold in the United States by 2030 were electric. Biden's 50% target, which was not legally binding, had won the support of US and foreign automakers. But what kind of experts are actual car manufacturers when you've got Trump and his brain being an authority on everything? Elon took to his social media platform to complain in Porky Pig terms about the bill, and Trump took to his social media platform to threaten Elon with more than just revoking the EV mandate. Elon's got a lot more to lose, apparently, more than the second straight quarter of tanking Tesla sales. Elon would have to close up shop and head back home to South Africa. When asked by reporters later in the morning if he would deport Musk, Trump and his best dime store mafia boss persona said mysteriously, "We'll have to take a look." I say mysteriously, but we know for sure it's simply ignorance. Though deliciously, and if he did but know it, quite ironically added, "We might have to put Doge on Elon." And Musk shot back, "So tempting to escalate this, so tempting, but I will refrain for now." Trump continued to hammer Musk later in the day as he visited Florida. "If Doge looks at Musk, we're going to save a fortune," he told reporters. Well, far from wanting to agree with Trump on that in a yeah, duh kind of way, surely it'd just be easier for Musk to go back to work at Doge and investigate the waste of human life occupying the Oval Office pushing the big-breasted bill. Instead, Musk is threatening to fund primary challenges of any Republican who voted on the bill if it is the last thing I do on this earth. And if that's as legally binding as saying he'd buy Twitter, we can then legitimately hold him to it and get Bezos to blast him into space to join his floating freaking Model S.
Depressingly, right-wing book bans are so ubiquitous these days that we rarely cover them among the stories we don't have time to talk about, because ironically, we literally wouldn't have time to talk about all of them. Side note, this is also the reason we don't cover every mass shooting or every Catholic priest who turned out to be a pedophile. However, the latest purge of completely fine books from school libraries in Tennessee is worth a quick mention. The sheer volume is kind of notable, thanks to the vague wording of the state legislation's 2024 amendments to their own 2022 Age-Appropriate Materials Act. Different counties have banned different books, with 150 in Knox County, over 320 in Oak Ridge, over 400 in Wilson County, and in a gust of overcompliance, 574 books in Monroe County.
Wow.
The list includes all the usual suspects, Fahrenheit 451, of course, being top of the list so that no one will figure out that book burning is bad. Lord of the Flies, The Color Purple and The Handmaid's Tale are also on the list, along with books about the Holocaust, racism and the existence of gay people. Lots of manga is gone, various graphic novels, works by Stephen King, Judy Blume, Toni Morrison, Maya Angelou and Kurt Vonnegut. Mm-hmm. Basically, hundreds of brilliant books you'd love to catch your teenager reading under the covers after they're supposed to be asleep. But then it gets weird. A companion volume to the popular elementary school series The Magic Treehouse is banned because it's about the Olympics in ancient Greece. The problem, it seems, is that the discus-throwing Greek statue on the cover is naked. You can't actually see anything, not like that pornographic state flag of Virginia that was banned in Texas schools. But if little kids see a statue of someone without clothes on, they might realise that nudity is a thing in the world, and then they'll definitely figure out how to have sex by recess. Worse than all of these, though, is the fact that in Monroe County, Tennessee, they have banned Calvin and Hobbes.
What?
Calvin and motherfucking Hobbes. The two greatest literary characters of the 20th century. The list they published is insufficiently detailed to know if it's the whole series or merely the eponymous first collected volume. But either way, this is a travesty which must not stand. While some online commenters have theorised that the reasoning for this outrage is Calvin's free-thinking, rebellious nature, that strip where he was an actual god, or the one where he fantasised about blowing up his school with an F-15, far more likely, given the amendment, is that Calvin generally dislikes bath time and has on occasion been seen escaping while unclothed. And as we all know, a line drawing of a naked six-year-old running at full speed is guaranteed to corrupt even the most hardy child and turn them into the kind of reprobate who makes anti-Trump podcasts and swears all the fucking time. Incidentally, now seems like a great time to remind listeners with kids that the Brooklyn Public Library has an online program called Books Unbanned, where kids from across America can borrow ebook versions of any restricted books absolutely free.
Yay. In 2024, a federal judge ruled in favor of educator Ms. Wood that Florida's enacting of the House Bill 1069 that prohibits teachers from using a pronoun or personal title that does not correspond to such person's sex was egregiously discriminatory. This law had been enforced against transgender educators, including Ms. Wood, who would be required to go by Mr. Wood in the classroom, an act that violates her personal dignity or risk losing her job. The judge ruled that it violated Ms. Wood's First Amendment rights by imposing a viewpoint-based speech restriction, ruling that personal titles, such as pronouns and honorifics, are a matter of individual identity, not subject to government control. As such, the law infringed upon Ms. Wood's protected rights to free expression. Of course, the 11th Circuit disagreed. In a ruling handed down by Trump-appointed judges Andrew L. Brasher and Kevin Newsom, the court determined that using one's pronouns and title in the classroom constitutes classroom duties and therefore falls under control of the state. In essence, the judges ruled that Ms. Wood had no First Amendment rights whilst performing her job as teacher, granting Florida the authority to compel her to use whatever pronouns or honorifics the state sees fit, even if they contradict her identity, and that requiring her to do so was not viewpoint discrimination. Judge Adalberto Jordan, an Obama appointee, issued a scathing dissent. The statute at issue here has nothing to do with curriculum and everything to do with Florida attempting to silence those with whom it disagrees on the matter of transgender identity and status. Florida cannot justify its viewpoint discrimination by relying on the very reason that such discrimination is constitutionally suspect, that it gets to decide what speech is permissible, the speech it likes, and what speech is prohibited, the speech it disagrees with. Of course, the bigoted, toilet-fixated, human-right-denying fuckers on the right in Florida don't give a fuck about the unforeseen consequences of Florida therefore requiring that married female teachers use the last name of their husbands in the classroom, even if they've chosen to keep their maiden names, because it declares as a matter of state policy that it does not like female teachers to appear to students to be independent of their husbands, or that unmarried female teachers use Mrs. instead of Ms. in the classroom because it declares as a matter of state policy that it wants students to think their female teachers are all married or should aspire to be married. If these possibilities sound First Amendment crazy, it's because they are. But just so long as Republican lawmakers get to discriminate against someone to exert their tiny-minded, emasculated, shriveled, powerless egos over someone now that slavery has been abolished, the one upside of this utterly frustrating, depressing news is that when they all get voted out, these laws will get overthrown and seen to be the unhinged frothings of culture warrior schoolchildren from their other fiction novel, Lord of the Flies.
There was a story in The Onion a couple of years ago. Mm. The headline was, "Teacher fired for breaking state's critical race theory laws after telling students she's black."
Nice.
Which is a great headline.
Perfect. Yeah.
And it is essentially this story.
Yes.
I'm depressed at how often Onion articles are becoming true.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't like it. Trump's potato-faced border czar really doesn't understand the Streisand effect. CNN did a little story about a new app called IceBlock, which probably would have passed without much notice, but Tom Homan wants to make a federal case about it, and now everyone is talking about this cool new app. The app, which again is called IceBlock, allows users to drop a pin on a map to let people know if ICE agents are spotted in the area, and other users in a 5-mile radius of the pin get a push notification to let them know they might want to avoid that area if they enjoy not being sent to a foreign gulag with no due process. Tom thinks it's disgusting that CNN are reporting on the app, which, in case you missed it, is called IceBlock. Mm-hmm. And it's only available on iPhones, because Androids don't allow you to sign up for push notifications and stay anonymous. The maker of the app, you see, which is called IceBlock, realises that if you have to give away any personal data to get this information, it actually makes you less safe due to the current administration's tendency to trample on civil rights if it lets them harm minorities. Although he doesn't look it, Tom is at least smart enough to suggest there's another reason that this is bad, over and above the fact that the IceBlock app makes it easier for people who are just going about their fucking day to avoid being abducted by masked men in unmarked vans. He claims that it actually puts his band of thugs at risk. He says, it's only a matter of time before... Sorry, I should do the voice. It's only a matter of time. He talks like he's got a mouth full of cheese. It's ridiculous. It's only a matter of time before someone sits in hiding and waits for an ICE agent and tries to take them out. Admittedly, that must be really scary for people who are simply trying to do their job and now have to worry that someone might grab them without warning, possibly abducting them and taking them somewhere where they'll be mistreated. What a terrifying ordeal that only a complete monster would make someone have to go through. In defence of his fear for his jackbooted goons, he points out the now frequently repeated statistic that there has been a 700% increase in assaults on ICE agents since Trump took office. These are assaults reported by the ICE agents, so it's unclear how many are akin to he looked at me funny or his face hurt my fist. But either way, 700% sounds like a huge increase. The fact that it sounds like a huge increase is why they say it like that, rather than saying there have been 79 such assaults this year compared to 10 in the previous 6 months. I wonder if there's any other possible reason for that change. Now, I expect ICE agents were attacking members of the public without identifying themselves just as much when Biden was president. It must be the public that's in the wrong. And apps, like IceBlock, which is free on the Apple Store, by the way. Tom also claims that ICE agents' jobs are already dangerous because they're going after the worst of the worst. That's not true either, because it's much easier to round up day labourers at Home Depots and people attending legal immigration hearings than to go after the actual bad guys. That's why 71% of the 56,000 plus people detained by ICE so far don't have any criminal record.
A study published on the 30th of June in The Lancet found that USAID-supported programs saved 92 million lives in low- and middle-income countries over the past two decades, including 30.4 million children under the age of five, something that the US was proud to be part of since 1961, when the agency was founded. The bringer of a power for good in a shattered world, a force to be admired and emulated globally in bringing health, wealth and well-being to many post-empire independent countries in the global south, a source of soft power that gave the US great cachet on the international development stage, a benevolent modelling of the best in Western values. Without this support, researchers project 14 million additional avoidable premature deaths by 2030. 2 days later, US Secretary of State Marco Rubio announced the official end of USAID, eliminating the world's largest humanitarian aid agency. In a State Department memo titled in fiction novel 1984's Ministry of Truth fashion, Make Foreign Aid Great Again, announcing the shutdown, Rubio laid into USAID, stating its charity-based model was against American interests and that it has spawned a globe-spanning NGO industrial complex at taxpayers' expense, labelling right there. He also attacked recipient countries and regions, notably sub-Saharan Africa, for not repaying the US with UN votes, despite billions in aid. As Elon Musk, the world's richest man, don't forget, famously tweeted he had skipped some great parties to put US aid into the wood chipper, telling the agency, time to die. Still, all that money saved will be lining the pockets of the disgustingly wealthy through all the tax breaks the government can now afford to give them. And as we know, there's no one more beneficent, altruistic, humane, humanitarian, neighbourly, public-spirited, philanthropic, generous, magnanimous, munificent and unselfish than the hyper-rich, eschewing their yachts, jets and spacecraft to give their fortunes away in funding international aid in the poorest countries of the world with no expectation of return other than decreases in infant mortality, proliferation of health and economic thriving and a sense of contributing to the well-being of mankind's future. Oh no, that's what those damned pinko commie bastards Bill Gates and George Soros do. No, you're fine. Keep it all, you guys, but don't forget who knowingly and with malice aforethought willingly killed 14 million people on your behalf when it comes to the next election.
One of the aforementioned non-criminals currently in ICE custody is Danish national Casper Eriksson. Casper legally immigrated to the US in 2013, moved to Mississippi where he met and married a US citizen, Savannah. They have four children together and Savannah is currently pregnant with a fifth. He started the process of becoming a US citizen before his two-year green card ran out in 2015, but forgot to file an I-751 form, petition to remove conditions on residence. Nothing seemed to be a problem until 2019, when the first Trump administration noticed the error and filed a removal order after he failed to attend an immigration hearing that Casper claims he was never informed about. Anyway, Trump left office without doing anything about it, and under the Biden administration, Casper's road to citizenship continued, ultimately leading to a letter in September 2024 to let him know everything was in order and arrange a final interview in April 2025. Casper showed up to that final interview and was arrested by ICE agents, too lazy to look for actual criminals. He was denied bail in May and has spent 10 weeks so far in detention. This is just one story of thousands of similar ones, and you may think the only quirk here is that Casper is white and delightsome, and indeed, he claims he's pretty much the only English speaker in the cell he shares with around 100 other ICE detainees. But that's not the reason I'm talking about him. The reason is that he's a Trump supporter. So naturally, he doesn't blame Trump, his overzealous ICE agents, or his fervour for booting people out of the country despite their attempts to do everything the right way and contributing to society. He doesn't blame himself for forgetting to file that important form or for somehow missing whatever notifications the first Trump administration sent him, or maybe didn't send him, to indicate there was a problem. No, he blames Joe Biden. Despite the fact that the immigration official who was present at his arrest specifically told him he probably wouldn't have been arrested under the previous administration, he says, "The reason I'm sitting here is more or less a product of the Biden administration. They were the ones who let me go through this process without saying there was a problem. They didn't keep an eye on it." Jesus fucking Christ.
It's like the Eric Idle character in Life of Brian who says... crucifixion, no, freedom. I said I didn't do anything wrong, so I'm free to go. And then he goes, "No, I'm only kidding. Yeah, crucifixion." Yeah, what a twat. Meanwhile, in Britain, the tiny, squalid, ugly bill calling for welfare reform in the guise of cutting personal independence payments to the disabled and long-term unemployed caused many Labour MPs to voice their concern, disdain and horror that the very party with a long history of supporting the needy in accordance with truly community-centric socialist principles could be considering cutting the welfare budget in order to fund an increase in defence spending and other fiscal black holes rather than, say, tax the bleeding rich in accordance with truly long-standing socialist principles. Why is the No New Taxes manifesto promises sacrosanct and the defending the parts of the community that experience severe barriers to the world of work not? The groundswell of dissent led to the bill being watered down to the extent that many MPs, including Labour, voted for an amendment to scrap the damn thing altogether until a proper impact analysis had been carried out, rather than rush it through half-assed and unfair in order to be seen to be doing something with promises to carry out an impact assessment and amend it later. Yeah, we saw how well that happened with, Brexit? Despite the Work and Pensions Secretary Liz Kendall saying Labour MPs are 100% behind the PM, it passed with only a 75 majority, despite all the PIP cuts being removed, and 49 of those against were 100% Labour. At PMQs this week, while Starmer was explaining how successfully the bedraggled, tepid, stupid, ugly bill got passed, and also defending the impact on the budget that taking the tough decision to not save $5 billion by reversing the tough decision to cut welfare support would have, Rachel Reeves was seen behind him with actual tears rolling down her face. Today, they both appeared chirpy and unified at a photo op presser in a hospital where they both said they were in lockstep. And the tears were nothing to do with Starmer continuing to have full confidence in Reeves. You know, exactly the same language Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng used about each other before one threw the other under the fiscal bus. If it weren't for the fact that this was the left we're talking about, it would be deliciously funny to watch. They're supposed to be the progressive ones. And yet the tough decisions never seem to involve a redistribution of wealth from the rich to the poor. Where is Robin Hood MP standing for Nottingham North when you need him? And is it just me, or is it actually getting quite difficult to not finish each of these headlines with the words cunts every single time? That's increasingly the only way to accurately sum up the perpetrators of these barbaric and heinous acts. Cunts.
It is not just you. So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Or simply tell one other person in person about how much they like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump. just like our straw man level patrons, Chuck Gray, Mike Smith, LT, Colleen Lyela, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M, Scott, Mark Reiki, and Amber Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED, we can just call her Amber. And last year at QED, I met the listener recognised at QED the year before, because we keep using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons, Renee Zed, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron, Kaz Tui. Thank you so much, everybody, for your continued patronage. It's very, very much appreciated. Thank you.
And speaking of QED, there's literally only a few tickets left for QED.
Oh,
so if you're thinking of coming this year, and it's the final
the last
year
one.
Ever,
this is it.
Get yourself to QEDcon.org and get tickets. Because otherwise, that's it. You won't be able to. That'll be gone.
We'll be there.
We'll be there.
We can put a name to a face to a name, and just hang out and have fun.
We would genuinely love to speak to you if you come
to
QED.
In real life, it'll be lovely. Yeah.
In the meantime, you can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump or in the Discord at fallacioustrump.com/discord.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big.